او رنگ آگاهش شیر پرابن نما میشنی بده یک کشن بستایی بودلی میشنی ستر دست گسن Jai Jai Sri Chaitanya Jai Nityananda Jai Jai Sri Chaitanya Jai Nityananda Jai Advaita Chandra Jai Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Jai Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Jai Jai Sri Chaitanya Jai Nityananda Nanda Jai Jai Sri Chaitanya Jai Nityananda Jai Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Jai Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Jai Shishirar Gopinath ki So, Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, chapter 21. The opulence and sweetness of Lord Krishna. And so today we have texts 19 and 20, but we will also read a few more, as the purport of text 20 is a very special purport. So, we'll read a few more. And on the board is text 20. So text 19 is Krishna Vatsar Asankyatar Sukadeva Vani Krishna Sanghe Kata Gopa Sankhya Nahijani. According to Sukadeva Goswami, Krishna has unlimited calves and cowherd boys with him. No one could count their actual number. Text 20, which is on the board. Eka eka gopekare yevatsa charana Eka eka gopekare yevatsa charana Koti arbudas sankhya padma taharagana Koti Arbuda Sankhya Padma Tahara Ganana Eka Eka Gopakare Yevatsa Charana Koti Arbuda Sankhya Padma Tahara Ganana Eka eko gopakare yevatsa charana Koti abuda sankhya padma tahara ganana Eka eko gopakare yevatsa charana Ladies?
Yeah.
Eka Eka. One after another. Gopa. Cowherd boys. Kare. Do. Ye. Whatever. Vatsa. Calves. Calves. Charana. Grazing. Koti. Anybody know there which koti? Specifically? That doesn't count. 10 million here. Then Arbuda. 100 million. Sankhya. Any guesses? Well, it could be that. 1 trillion. Padma. Well, yeah, that's the problem. Sorry, you never get this one, because that's our 10 trillion. So you can start to imagine what my text and purport is here. Tahara Ganana. The enumeration of that. Translation. Each of the cowherd boys was tending calves to the extent of a koti, Arbuda, Sankhya and Padma. That is the way of counting. Prabhupada's purport. A very special purport, so please listen carefully. We might need we could have distributed a few calculators for this class. Might have helped everybody follow along. Purport. According to Vedic mathematical calculations, and I hated maths in school, so here we go. The following enumeration system is used. Units, tens, dasa, hundreds, sata, thousands, sastra, thousands are easy, 10,000s, ayuta, and 100,000s is, actually in the word for word, we didn't have 100,000. I think it's this, when we talk in money in India, we often use this term, a lakh, yeah. 10 times laksha is niyuta. 10 times niyuta is koti. 10 times koti is arbuda. 10 times arbuda is vrinda. 10 times vrinda is karva. And if you know where we're at this point, what karva? How many notes in a karva? 10 times karva is nikharva. 10 times Nikarva is Sankhya. 10 times Sankhya is Padma. And 10 times Padma is Sagara. 10 times Sagara is Antya. And 10 times Antya, very strangely, is Madhya. Bewildering ability, has gone backwards. And 10 times Madhya is Parabdha. No, that's one we do know. Each item is 10 times greater than the previous one. Thus all the cowherd boys who were companions of Krishna had many calves to take care of. So the purport is nicely in that last line. There's lots. I think that's our simple conclusion. There's lots. There's lots of cowherd boys, there's lots of cows, and there's lots of paraphernalia, and there's lots of everything. So I think our limited, our Vedic knowledge will not extend to learning these nice mathematical terms. I was thinking, possible response to this purport, there's one very nice little book called Nectar by Numbers. Is it Nectar by Numbers? It's a very small little book. And I think the devotee is Akundundubi, I think. If it's a devotee, put it together. And it's just a small book compiling all the different numerical calculations in our scriptures. There's so many lists of twos, fours, six, eights, tens, twelves. And he puts them all together in categories, all the different groups of these numbers. Now, much to your relief, I couldn't get my hands in the book because I thought we could have the class could have consisted of going through the book and see who knew the categories in the fours and the sixes and the eights and the tens and because it's a lot of fun to read how things are so systematic. But I didn't get my hand in the book. So we'll read a few more texts beyond this one. Text 21. Vetravenu dala sanga vatsa alankara gopa ganera yatatara nahi lekapara. All the cowherd boys had unlimited calves. Similarly, their canes, flutes, lotus flowers, horns, garments and ornaments were all unlimited. They cannot be limited by writing about them. Sabahalya chaturbhuja vakunte rapati pritak pritak brahmanandira brahma kari suti stuti. The cowherd boys then became four-handed Narayans, predominating deities of Vaikuntha planets. All the separate Brahmas from different universes began to offer their prayers unto the lords. So this is, I'll recap, but it's a little interesting the structure of these texts here, because, so we know Lord Chaitanya speaking to Sanat Goswami, and the chapter is the opulence and sweetness of Lord Krishna. So the first beginning text is about the opulence of Krishna. Get some idea of how great and how opulent the Lord is. So there was the previous text in 18, where Lord Chaitanya said, "We do not hear of such wonderful things anywhere else. Simply by hearing of these incidents, one's consciousness is agitated and cleansed." It was interesting. I'm not sure the previous speaker dealt with the word agitated, but I can't help but think that last purport we just read was somewhat agitated. Like all these lists of numbers, like how can I possibly keep up with these numbers? There's too many. But because it's in relation to Krishna, even these numbers, the tens of thousands, tens of trillions, it's all purifying to hear about. But in that purport, Prabhupada elaborates on the pastime of Lord Brahma, steaming the cowherd boys. So one would gather that this is how the previous acharyas have commentated on it and elaborated that this is what Lord Chaitanya is referring to, even though Lord Chaitanya himself in the text doesn't mention it. So then then he goes on to this about the unlimited numbers. And then he goes back, Lord Chaitanya mentions about all the Narayans appearing from the cowherd boys. So that's what that text. And then he goes on to say further, Eka Krishna Dehe Hatya Sabara Prakashe Kshaneke Sabai Se Sarira Pravishe. All these transcendental bodies emanated from the body of Krishna. And within a second, they all entered again within his body. Eha deki brahma hailya mohita vishmita stutikari epache karila nischita. When the Lord Brahma from this universe saw this pastime, he was astonished and struck with wonder. After offering his prayers, he gave the following conclusion. Ye kaha krishnira vaibhava muni sabha janon se januka kaha imane muni emanon. Lord Brahma said, if someone says that he knows everything about Krishna's opulence, let him think that way. But as far as I am concerned, with my body and mind, I consider it this way. Eye tumara ananta vaibhavamrita sindhu moravan manogamya nahi eka bindu. My Lord, your opulence is like an unlimited ocean of nectar, and it is verbally and mentally impossible for me to realize even a drop of that ocean. And then not any quotes from the Srimad Bhagavatam. Jananta eva janantu kimbak kimbaktya name prabhu manasovapasovacho vaibhavam tavagochara. And basically paraphrases the same text what Lord Brahma just said. There are people who say, I know everything about Krishna. I won't think of what country a lot of those people might come from. Let them think that way. As far as I am concerned, I do not wish to speak very much about this matter. Oh my Lord, let me say this much. As far as your opulences are concerned, they are all beyond the reach of my mind, body, and words. Purport. This is the quotation from Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.38. Spoken by Lord Brahma after he had stolen Lord Krishna's calves and cowherd boys, and Krishna had exhibited his transcendental opulence by recreating all the stolen calves and cowherd boys by his Vishnu Murti expansions. After he had seen this, Brahma offered the following above prayer. So that's text 27. So, this is a very nice meditation. Brahma saying, if someone says that he knows everything, let him say that. I know everything about Krishna. And it's interesting, at both times, let him think that way. Let him think that way if he wants. It's kind of an acknowledgement of like, what can I do? If somebody's got this attitude, then okay, that's fine for you. But this is what I think. And this is what then Brahma says it quite strongly. So, this is an important area for devotees to think about, and especially, I think, connecting it to today's auspicious day, the appearance of Bhagavad Gita. I would assume most of us here have read Bhagavad Gita, and probably many, many times. And therefore, all of us could say, I know Bhagavad Gita. Do you know Bhagavad Gita? Yes, I know Bhagavad Gita. But do we know Bhagavad Gita? That's what people say. Or then if you look at our behavior, often we have heard it said, sometimes you have this in ISKCON about how, oh no, not the Sunday feast talk, you are not the body again. So there's different schools of thinking. Some say, well, we need to hear it again, and again, and again, and again, because we're all pretty much, if we are anyway honest, still hard and fast convinced that I'm this body. So we need to hear it again. And then there's others thinking, no, we need to, same people coming the same Sunday for years need a little spice. So there's two schools. So I think I had a question, I just came back from a very nice retreat in Vrindavan. And one of the retreats is with in Govardhan, and we had four different speakers, and they spoke just Krishna Katha. Each four speakers had a section of Krishna Lila to talk about. And it was very wonderful. It was very, very wonderful, because these four speakers are clearly absorbed in their dedicated, their hearing about Krishna. And when somebody's dedicated to it, I like this expression, it spills over. It spills over. And that's also in relation to Vaisheshika, who's pushing kind of the new way to do book distribution. He's been doing it for some years. It's not like the quota system or the duty system or the money pressure. It's, hey, get Krishna conscious and share it a bit. And which he embodies very, very much. He's an intensely Krishna conscious person, about his bhajan, about his deity worship, about his hearing, about his sangha. And the reality is, if you're tasting it, the nature of the Krishna conscious experience is that you share it, you give it. And then when you give it to someone, it's not an artificial thing. That's not and all the defects, or all the difficulties that he's had with book distribution will go away, will vanish. If it's based on that one thing, you're just spilling out what you're tasting. So these devotees, I felt like were doing that. There were something was spilling over. So I think I have a question. Who, for example? Okay, let's have a quick show of hands. Who here has heard the pastime of Krishna and the Kaliya serpent? Yes, everybody's heard. Okay, everybody's heard. The Krishna and the Kaliya, Panduji. You've heard about the Krishna and the Kaliya serpent? Or Krishna Kaliya. Krishna jumps into the Yamuna and he fights. You've heard that? Okay. Okay. Next show of hands for this question, please. Who, while hearing the pastime, was overcome by such an emotional sense that you were froze to the spot? Time stopped. Hunger vanished. Thirst vanished, your sore legs vanished. The person next to you, who possibly was annoying you for something they were doing, vanished. And then you woke up, come out 2 days later or something out of this, thinking, oh, what did Krishna do next? Anybody here have that? Oh, Remy Vuri. Okay, Remy was going to reveal a little of his private bhajan. So that's what hearing does to you. That's actually what hearing does. It's meant to do. And our scriptures are full of what actual hearing, the reaction of a hearing does. And
And like the, one little example, Bisha, I mentioned the Kaliya pastime because if you note in the 10th canto, and even I think Srila Prabhupada, the way he writes it in Krishna book, in the previous chapter, Sukadeva Goswami, he just mentions this little pastime briefly. And then he just gives one text on it. And then he moves on to something else. But Maharaj Pariksha goes, oh, what was that? What was that you mentioned about Kaliya and Krishna and Jamuna and dancing? What was that about? Could you tell me about that, please? And actually, a number of times during the retreat, actually, Burjan Prabhu would give these wonderful little asides to the psychology that was going on between the speaker and the hearer. That's not so obvious, but even if you pay attention, especially to the way the response that the speaker gives the question, you can get an idea of what's going on in their own heart and head. So it's understood that Sukadeva Goswami didn't want to tell this pastime of Kaliya because it was so intense. Because everybody would like, we hear what the residents of Vrindavan, they came rushing to the side of Jamuna, and most marshals would jump in, and me, especially Mother Yashoda. Mother Yashoda was the most chronic case, like she was like jumping in, and like only because Balaram stopped her that she didn't do this. And she would have died on the spot, it said. The only thing that stopped her from dying was, why didn't she die? Out of grief of seeing Krishna wrapped in this massive serpent. Why didn't Mother Yashoda die? No, there was no hope. She was like, there's actually 101 heads on Kaliya. And Krishna was there like coiled and wrapped, man, quite some time as well. It wasn't looking good, right? We hear it was like one point, I think for an extended 2 hours, I think, 1.2 hours, Krishna was stuck in Kaliya's coils. It's not looking good. How does Mother Yashoda think? Oh, well, maybe he'll get it together. Maybe he'll... No, no way. She fainted. She had to go out. She fell unconscious. And going unconscious was the only thing that stopped her from dying because the pain was so much. And then everybody there, Nanda Maharaj and all the cowherd men and the Gopis, it was all extremely traumatic. And Sukadeva Goswami is not just telling the story. Sukadeva Goswami is like wrapped up in that mood that they were in. So he was kind of thinking, this is too painful. I can't do this. This is like, it's too intense. So he wanted to move on quickly to another, a nicer story to tell. But Maharaj Pariksha said, no, that sounds like an exciting story. Please tell it to me. So he does. But this is what hearing the pastime will do to us. It's because like, we'd all be wrapped in the fear of what's happening to Krishna. Is Krishna going to be, is this it? Is he going to die? Is the life of our life leaving us? We would be like overwhelmed. So unfortunately doesn't tend to happen so easily for us. So we compensate or we try our best by at least sincere, attentively and sincerely hearing nicely. And then there's a whole, and Satchananda Swami is very, 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 this is one of his big points he likes to push. And every evening before his presentation, he would say some text or some encouragement on the importance of hearing and how you have to hear. How you have to hear. It's not just sit there and my ears are clean, I had my shower this morning, so I can sit there and hear. No, hearing is a very, very scientific process of how you hear. It's a scientific process, and then it's also a process of sincerity. What you bring to the exchange of hearing from somebody. And throughout the whole Bhagavatam, we constantly step between Maharaj Pariksha and Sukadeva Goswami. Again and again and again, Maharaj Pariksha asks him the question, and Sukadeva Goswami says, oh, your questions are so nice, because just by hearing your questions, I want to speak more. So let us go on and engage in this Krishna Katha. We bring, the science of hearing. So, and there's a nice presentation where Bhakti Vaibhav Maharaj, he refers to Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, which is a very technical scripture. But he's analyzed it very nicely and explained how hearing happens in four stages. Satchananda Swami, there's different, slightly different variations of it. Sometimes it can be five or four or five. But the first way of hearing is what? What's the first way to hear? The most simplest way to hear. Be attentive. Yeah. Just be there. Be there when somebody's... And I think I use the example of someone's talking to you, right? Someone's talking to you. How many times have any of us turned around and said, "Oh, sorry, could you say that again, please?" I was like a million miles away. I was thinking about this. How many times that happened to us? We're hearing, somebody's there in our ears. Thankfully, we've got good ears; they're working. But we're not hearing because we're not being attentive. We're not putting our mind to it. So the first level of hearing is bring our minds there, and this is what we always hear about japa. Bring our mind there. Don't have it wandering across the universe. Bring it to the holy name, and then you're hearing. Otherwise, it's just going off and not bring it. So then what's the next stage of hearing? So we're attentive. Then what do we have to do? What's nice to do if somebody says something nice? And I like to give just a very simple example. Even just somebody's asking you to do something, right? And they say something to you, and then you say, "Sorry, I wasn't listening. Could you say it again, please?" And then you realize what they're asking you to do is, "Could you arrange a car for me, please?" So what's the next level? Repeat it. Okay, yeah. If you repeat it to make sure you've been attentive. But so you've heard it and you've repeated it, and so what do? You act. You respond. You respond to what you've heard. You don't just go, "Oh, that's very nice. You've asked me to get a car, or you've asked me to cook something, or you've asked me." You respond to it. So when we hear Krishna's passing, we tend to, and then when something happens, we have to think about it. What does that mean? And again, it's nice when you hear from a speaker, especially like these speakers at the retreat, you can just know they're thinking about it so much, especially when they bring out these subtleties of between the exchanges. "Oh, I never thought of that." And it's just, there's one example. What was that one obvious one? I can't think of any. There's so many cases in Krishna pastimes we're so familiar with it, but you have to stop and think about, one example, which I won't get into here, but like, why didn't, when Krishna left Vrindavan and the residents of Vrindavan were completely distraught, there's so many options. Why didn't this happen? Why didn't that happen? Why didn't... You think about it like, but that was it. They're in pain and Krishna just goes off and he promised and he does. But there's so many discussion on why didn't this happen? And going through all the options. It's very nice to think about it. But anyway, yes, we have to think about it. We're attentive, then we think about it. And then, we bring our mind, we're attentive, then we think about it. And then, and we act upon it. Sorry, I actually mix those two, merge together. So we're attentive, then we think about it, and then we act upon it. And then finally, when you act upon it, then the actual stage of hearing is the fruit. What fruit does it bring? How has it changed you? And that's, we have in the 11th canto with the verse, Bhakti Prasano Bhava Viraktir Anyatatrak Esha Kala Cha. That three things should happen when you've heard nicely, when you've been attentive, when you've thought about it, and you've responded, three things should happen. You should directly experience the Lord. You should feel a relief from miseries, and a crease of devotion, and a crease of perception of the Lord, and a complete automatic sense of renunciation, sense gratification just disappears. Just dies, just vanishes as a fruit of hearing. Simply hearing nicely, these three things should happen. Your devotion increase, your perception of the Lord, and renunciation just becomes, it's no longer this gyani process of having to like restrain. It just automatically happens because you're getting, as we know, param dasvarnivartate, the higher taste. So that's what hearing should be like. But I like Brahma's point here. There are people who say, "I know everything about Krishna." So this is something we have to be very keen on not letting this happen to us, and it's a problem we might have, especially like with say Bhagavad Gita, and today we're going to recite Bhagavad Gita, but we actually have to approach it understanding I've never heard it, and many devotees advocate when you approach Srila Prabhupada's books and you go to sit down to read, you have to enter a certain meditation. That was one nice point, actually. I'm not sure who said it on the retreat. Said, this is, we're in Vrindavan, right? And we know Vrindavan's, Gokula Vrindavan is not even Goloka Vrindavan. It's the spiritual world directly. But, due to our
not yet, our vision is not pure, we're not aware of the uppercut lila, the unmanifest lila that's still going on there. It's still going on. Nothing has changed. And somebody said, nothing has changed? Wow, I talked a few times about the rate of change in Vrindavan. It's quite shocking how it's changing so much. But yet, in spiritual eyes, nothing has changed. It's all going on there. But it's going on in apakat lila. We see prakat, we see the manifest. We don't see the unmanifest. But somebody made a nice point that the link between our level right now and our state, we're not pure, and that unmanifest state, the pure stage, is hearing. But hearing in the mood of separation. Adding some want, some need, some hankering, some desire into it. That makes the bridge between where we're at and where Krishna is doing what he's doing. And that's what we very much want. We want to be hearing about Krishna. We want to be aware of Krishna. We want to be experiencing Krishna's lila. The nice hearing is done by like that. So, I was thinking this, I know everything about Krishna. We hear in Madhurya Kandambani, this frightening book that explains very scientifically the process of devotional service. And he goes through the many stages and he explains how there's symptoms we can see that if you're actually practicing nicely or not practicing, what to speak of being advanced, that's another thing. There's symptoms to knowing you're advanced or not. But there's symptoms to knowing you're even practicing the process to become advanced. And he goes through all the symptoms. But then he explains there's five other symptoms that one should be very keen on watching. Because like those symptoms of unsteady devotional service, you can't directly deal with them. You can't say, like one of them, like they're like one who becomes very much like here, puffed up in enthusiasm, utsaha mayi. Now I know about Krishna. And we offer the example of somebody's joined, they learned how to dress a dhoti, get the tilak straight, a few verses in Bhagavad Gita, they know how to move around the temple nicely, word about dad, what to do, da 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 da. I've got it down. I'm a devotee. You know, you took me like, 3 months. Madhavanandapur tells the incident of when his spiritual master glorified ISKCON, very much so. Madhavanandapur realized, wow, I've never joined ISKCON. I've never really joined it. And then people ask him now, is Madhavanandapur, when did you join ISKCON? He says, well, actually, I'm still working on my application. I haven't got far yet to be a qualified member of ISKCON, because when you hear what a spiritual master and Srila Prabhupada talked about ISKCON, you go, whoa, that's what ISKCON's about and what it should be doing. It's very glorious. So somebody who gets puffed up, somebody gets a little excessively enthusiastic. Enthusiasm is very nice, but excessively so. Or somebody who can't make a decision. Shall I do this? Shall I do that? Shall I do this or this or this or this or that and that and that and that? Now, and that's a painfully very common one we all endear. Or, that's it, now on, no more of this. That's it, I'm never doing that again. Da 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 da. Fast forward a few weeks, and there we are again. Or, why is anybody laughing? Nobody, has somebody else experienced that too? Okay, I thought it was just me. Or, from now on, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this. I'm going to like add this number hearing. I'm going to read it. Da 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 da. Fast forward a few weeks, and there we are again, not doing it. So, these are symptoms that are described. Now, you can't suddenly say, well, I'm not going to let it happen. You can't just directly take them head on, because they're symptoms of our present state. But then Vishnu Chakri Thakur explains that when you do your sadhana, there are certain things you should not do. And then your sadhana will have the power that it's empowered with. Our sadhana, given by Srila Prabhupada, the chant, 16 rounds, follow the principles, attend the Mangalarti, attend the deity worship, hear Bhagavatam, associate with devotees, take prasadam, and do something to help the Krishna conscious movement, is all highly empowered with Srila Prabhupada's pleasure shakti. And devotees we know here so much state that when Prabhupada was like, pleased, boy, were you, that was it. You were, that was as good as it could get when Srila Prabhupada was pleased with you. So that potency Prabhupada has given there to be pleased by our following his instructions is it's extremely alive and extremely powerful.
But we have to access it by not doing five things. And I've been wanting to kind of venture the, well, I presume devotees might know the list, but what, for example, should we not do when we're doing a sadhana? One, what's the first one we shouldn't do when performing our hearing? When we sit to chant or sit to read, what should we not do? Try not to do. Falling asleep. The first thing to do is just, God forbid, stay awake. And I know myself, that's why I'm a walker, because I always have to, because if I sit, 99% I sit. So at least this first thing, I can remove that, laya. Just this tendency to, when you hear, or you tend to, if you tend to chant, sleep, or hearing, or even remembering. He mentions three, because with chanting it's easier to stay awake, with hearing it's a little harder, or remembering it's the most hard. It's more subtle, you have to be very alert and fresh. And then the second one he explains is when one's doing one's sadhana, one should not be distracted. One should be there. One should be there when one's doing whatever one's doing. And should not be excessively, and that's again, for somebody like me who is a japa walker, it's usually said, well, when you're walking, you get distracted. So then I have to do things to not be guilty of that defect. And then the third one is, so okay, you're not falling asleep, you're not distracted, then what's the third thing that might be happening? It's interesting, Runa Supri adds three little levels to this. The first one is sadhana in the mode of ignorance. At least let our sadhana not be in the mode of ignorance. Let's stay awake. The second one, distraction, might be sadhana in the mode of passion. Ah, we're thinking of what we're going to do today, we're thinking of what we did yesterday, thinking of it, always planning backwards, forwards. No, just at least quiet. That's why we went to do it early in the morning. It's a little better to be focused. But then sadhana in the mode of goodness, what's the defect we have to watch out for sadhana in the mode of goodness? Yeah, we're kind of thinking, okay, I'm not falling asleep. Okay, I'm not so overwhelmed by distractions. Hey, I'm doing okay. Fine. No, there has to be some drive, some. Come on, I have to hear. And this is again, Satyananda Swami, I think, does to his audiences when he's in front of them. Please excuse me, my dear devotees, you. And he goes like, yeah. He touches you and he says, please listen attentively. Please do this. You have to. And so we know he's doing it. It's clearly he's doing it. So then he's trying to impress upon us the importance that we have to do it also. So, and then the other two qualities about not trying, avoiding bad qualities, which we know, try to be nice as much as we can, and it can be a struggle at times, and then avoid mundane things. Basic sadhana, we should stay away from rasavada, the taste that we still have for mundane things. So those things we can do, right? They're all very tangible things which bring us from the anista bhajana kriya to the nista. From the unsteady where it's like da 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 to where it's actually fixed. And nista is the platform then we start, things start to happen. This verse Satambra Sangam Mamavir Samvido Bhavantu Karnar Sayana Pra. This verse actually Madhava Nandpur was quoting quite a lot. It's on the stage of, in the association of devotees, one hears nicely from in the association of elevated devotees, and when one is fixed in that, then devotion and devotion service begin. It's a nice, sobering thought. But our devotion really begins on nista, bhajan, and kriya. When we're on the nista, when we're actually a little fixed. Otherwise, the material influence is always coming in, and throwing water on our developments. So, and therefore, that's why at this point we have to, and therefore, in that stage, one is starting to become a little bit aware of Krishna and then realizes, I know nothing about Krishna. I know nothing about Krishna. And then that's when one goes to hear about Krishna nicely. It's like in the Shishastakam, these two verses that, like we know, like Trinada Peace and Uchina, this verse is humility, right? Such an important element. But humility is not something you force upon yourself. You can, like, I'm going to be humble. Humility is not squeezed out of our minds and mundane intelligence. It grows out of the previous verse. Durdaivam ijisammi hanjanyanuragaha. I've tried, and it's not happening. Why is it not happening? That's really good. that frustration, there's an element of frustration in this verse that says, I've taken the process, I've done this, it's not happening. Why is it not happening? Because I'm so unfortunate. And then naturally out of that, there's a certain sense of, oh, Krishna. We start to make prayers, and we start to make real prayers, and then things can happen. So it has to be from only from trying very hard do we actually start to realize how incompetent we are. It's not a mental thing, just a mental imposition on the mind. We actually, it grows out of our sense. Like we always say, what one of our expressions we like to use is, what is it? One should not think less about oneself, one should think about himself less. Yes. So because I think I'm so fallen, it's puffing up the false ego. The false ego is back behind everything, and it's so subtle we cannot imagine, we have no perception, and it's still working hard. But we should forget about that and just think how great Krishna is. Because our insignificance, our tininess, will come out very naturally when you get a sense of Krishna. Some sense of Krishna, and that's it. Don't worry, you don't have to figure out how fallen, how small you are. You just get a glimpse of how great Krishna is. Then you see it automatically. It seems to take years to realize how much we don't know. It's a fruit, a very hard-earned fruit to realize, I know nothing. I know nothing, because because the nature of our false ego, even though when we come and we get the whole basics down, the false ego is still on full fire, okay, we got the basics down, but the false ego is still driving everything, and it's telling us, hey, now, see? Okay, you didn't make it materially, you're not a big materialist, you're not really rich. Okay, well, that's for commies anyway, we don't care about that. But now you're a great devotee. Now you're a really first-class devotee. Look, see, you've dressed, the dhoti's really straight, and the tilak looks very impressive, and you can play mardanga maybe, play cartels, you can even know the words, the songs. You're great, you're doing really good. So it goes from trying to puff us up materially to puffing us up materially, but just dressed up as spiritually. It's still mundane, it's still the false ego driving us forward. And that takes a long time to get past that and beat past our false ego. And usually it takes, which I was thinking happens very much in this passing of Lord Brahma, it takes something embarrassing to happen. This passing of Lord Brahma, I think it was very embarrassing. And we should be prepared for that, actually. And I was thinking, when this past him happens, of Lord Brahma, he teaches us a number of things which help us get to this point of I know nothing about Krishna. I'm trying to connect the two. So we know the pastime. Dare I say that now? No, we don't know the pastime. So let's quickly. We understand that it was. What actually, when Brahma, actually, even just on a technical point, what happened when Brahma stole the cowherd boys? What just happened a few hours ago? Anybody know what happened just a few hours before Brahma stole the cowherd boys? Agasura, yeah. It was the same morning. And it's actually, back to Rick Prabhu pointed out the other day, we were having a little sangha at the appreciation thing. He said, usually it's just after Krishna kills someone, they have lunch. Because killing a demon, maybe a little bit of work involved. But it's usually that time of the day, it's kind of like late morning, early afternoon, just before lunchtime. Krishna just gets killed some demon, and then they sit down, okay, let's have lunch. So, Brahma had observed the killing of Agasura. And then Brahma observed the cowherd boys and Krishna sitting down having lunch. What was Brahma amazed about? What was Brahma? Brahma was feeling amazed. That's what the preliminary for Brahma stealing the cowherd boys and cows was. He was amazed. What was he so amazed about? Yeah, Krishna just killed Agasura. That was impressive. Krishna was sitting down with boys and having them put food in his mouth. That just can't be right. Something's wrong here. It really created a big doubt in his mind. This little boy going into the mouth of a serpent and choking him and lights coming out and absorbing in his body. Yeah, okay. Yeah, that kind of makes sense for Lord Narayan, for Krishna. He could. But sitting down with boys, with plates, on the grass, picking out a food, biting something, putting it in their mouth. No. Crosses the line. This can't be God. Moochie, moochie, moochie. So Krishna only eats food from yogic Brahmins who have this ceremony and do everything very pucker. And make, so something's wrong. So because of that doubt, then he gets covered. He gets a little blinded. This can't be God. He says, I don't do this, for example. And that's why we know, I think here, Brahma was a little proud. That's horrible. I mean, no, nobody does that. So he can't be God. God would never be so muchy. So because of that little blindness and his amazement, he gets covered over. And then he engages then. So what does he do first, Brahma? What, Brahma then comes in. Yeah. Well, first the cows. Yeah, the calves. Is it calves or cows at this stage? It's the calves. Funny, because that's actually part of the pastime later. Yeah, it must be the calves. Okay, for the calves. So the first thing, the calves go to wander, and Brahma comes and steals the calves. So then the cowherd boys and Krishna sit in the lunch and look around and go, "Oops, we're so absorbed in our eating together, we've forgotten our duty looking after the calves." So Krishna goes, no, you all sit here and sit and wait and enjoy your lunch. I'm back in a second. I'll go get the calves back. So Krishna goes with what in his hand? What specific type of seed is it mentioned, I think it was a handful of yogurt and rice, wasn't it? I think it's mentioned specifically yogurt and rice. And it's interesting, 1 year later, when Ma comes, what's in Krishna's hand? The same yogurt. So, and there's not too many comments on that, but you can just, it kind of connects to the mood of Krishna at the end. He's still walking around with his little bowl of yogurt and rice in his hand. So Krishna goes, no, you stay here, I'll go and get the cows, and get the calves back. So then Krishna goes and he wanders here, and he looks there, and he looks there, and he looks there, and looks everywhere, and he can't find them. So something's wrong, I better go back and tell the boys that we're in trouble. Because I can't find them. So he goes back and goes, what's going on? He turns up and they're not there. And it said that actually even Krishna initially was like, oh no, what am I going to tell the parents? What am I going to tell the coward men? I've lost the calves. And what am I going to tell the parents? I've lost the coward, lost all my friends. This initially is, again, this like, in absorbed the lily was like, really, like we hear in Agasura, when all the boys walked into Agasura, Krishna was thinking, what are they doing? Don't do this, don't do this. This is a big demon. Krishna was so absorbed, he was actually fearful for the boys. So again, here he was so absorbed in his pleasure potency that he thinks now I'm in trouble. But then Krishna realizes, I think I know who this is, what's going on here. So so to teach a little lesson, I'm going to show him how you can do all the tricks you want, Lord Brahma, but I'm not dependent upon you. You're not the supreme. So Krishna immediately we hear manifests out of his body all the boys, all the calves. And it's amazing I mentioned quite a few times, exactly as they were. Every little detail down to their behavior, their manners, their little idiosyncrasies, the way they had the flute tucked here and the buffalo horn here. Every little detail was just exactly as it was. So no one would notice. And we hear that. No one noticed for the next year. And they all engaged in with the residents of Vrindavan. We hear a number of things, of course. This is Krishna reciprocating with the residents who all were so much more attached to Krishna that Krishna fulfilling their desires by letting them have him directly as their children. And they did that for 1 year. And they all became very, very attached, more attached. So then after we hear 1 year in our time, and a few moments, a few seconds, Brahma went, he went, came back, and he came back and he saw Krishna sitting there, coward boys, calves, all exactly as it was. You know what Brahma does immediately after he sees it? What does he do? What's his first response? Caves the check. Now hang on, this is, yeah, something like, maybe I didn't take them. And actually, it's explained by Charles, he actually didn't take them, of course. This is similar to the famous Lord Chaitanya and Sita pastime, that when Ravana took Sita, And we heard the Kurma Brahmins really just upset about this. Lord Chaitanya says, no, actually, it wasn't really Sita. Nobody can touch Sita. Same with the coward boys. Brahma can't put his hand near Krishna's coward boys. Not, but so there was a, they were there, but they weren't visible anymore. And Brahma takes another set, whatever that exactly technically means. So Brahma goes back and sees, hang on, maybe I got it wrong. Goes and says, no, they're still there, lying asleep, as I put them. And then he goes back and sees it again. And no, they're all there with Krishna. And then he thinks, what does Brahma think? What do you think Krishna's doing? Yeah. Well, he's thinking that, okay, I went, they're there, and maybe since I'm traveling from there to get back here, Krishna took them again and put them back here again. Maybe just Krishna's moving faster than me, because it's okay, maybe he could move faster. And he's just going back and forward, putting them there and putting... Because the idea, because they were so identical, the idea of having another set that were 100%, we know the pastime, Brahma Vimohana Lila. It was very bewildering. You can't have an exact set of all, and of course, as we hear in the text, unlimited coward boys and calves. So then Brahma, we hear, gets, okay, the sense of the bewilderment, he gets very bewildered. And then out in response to the bewilderment, we hear then Krishna manifests how all these coward boys and calves are all directly Vishnu. But it's also explained that it's not just, because we have the picture in our Krishna book, that it's not just Vishnu, but what he also manifests was everything in existence manifested to Brahma's vision. Everything that existed, like time personified, the modes of nature personified, the material energies, like the qualities, everything that exists manifested in a personified form, and then all the Brahmas also the manifested. We know, the famous pastime when Krishna called all the Brahmas together. But also in this situation, Brahma sees there's all these boys are Vishnu, and everything in creation is here, and all the Brahmas are here too, worshipping Vishnu. So he really gets, a quick glimpse. It's not a very long, quick glimpse of, he realizes, okay, he's God. He's really God. Everything, so I accept it. And then we hear, then as soon as he thinks that, then Krishna closes it all in again, and then Brahma makes his prayers. So time is pretty much up. But just in relation to the prayers, what's Krishna's response to the prayers? Yeah, he didn't care very much. Even more so, he completely ignored them. There was like zero response. I mean, zero. He just stood there with his handful of yogurt and rice. Brahma made, which are very beautiful prayers, our acharyas, they're very, very beautiful. And Prabhupada there's like three or four of them that Prabhupada refers to. They're very beautiful prayers, they're wonderful. Actually, of all the prayers in the Krishna book, I know many devotees say they're their favorite prayers, so they're not anyway lacking eloquence and philosophy. But Krishna does nothing. He responds zero. And it's interesting in relation to like in the Kaliya pastime, Kaliya was a demon, and then the Nagapatis come, and when they make their prayers, and most cases when people make prayers, Krishna responds very nicely, actually. So, okay, I thank you for your prayers, I accept, here's the benediction, Krishna always responded. He didn't respond here. He said nothing. So how do we see that? Is Krishna kind of like, is Krishna just rude? Somebody says something to you and Krishna's like, nobody says something? Is that not rude? Was Krishna being rude? Ignored and... Oh, he was... Oh, sad. Okay. That could be one point, yeah? He's basically... especially, I think, this handful of yogurt is significant. Krishna wanted just to get back to what he was doing. He really wanted to get on with what he... Like, he just... And it's explained that in his mind, he was thinking, why is this four-handed person making all these prayers to me? What's his business? It's definitely not the mood of Vrindavan. And that's why Brahma quickly, if he makes his prayers, gets out, because it's just so much not in the mood. And it's interesting, because Brahma is a very, 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 very special personality. Krishna doesn't have to reciprocate. I like that. Krishna is not obliged to reciprocate because Brahma is Krishna's devotee. He's a great devotee. So I was thinking, that's one we can take from this lesson, that we can make our prayers, and we're devotees, trying to be devotees. We have to be prepared for Krishna going, okay, I'll get back to you eventually. But right now, this. So Krishna sometimes might ignore us, but now we know he's not really ignoring us because he stood there and listened to Brahma's prayers nicely. But he didn't respond to anything. He just kind of, please, do you think I want to get back to my lila? So Brahma says them, and then Brahma, he also wants to get back to his duty. And Krishna immediately goes back to the coward boys, and they, Krishna, where were you? That was fast. You're only gone like a few seconds, and you're back already. And then Krishna continues his lunch with his coward boys. So these things we can enjoy hearing about the possums again and again, and then we can learn from them. So I said we can learn how, like Brahma, we should be careful that our pride doesn't blind us. Brahma got blinded. There's other points, like we have to be careful. We shouldn't be surprised if devotees do outrageous things. I mean, stealing Krishna's intimate friends is as outrageous as you can get. Now, actually, it's not the most. What was more outrageous than that? Who very soon after did the more outrageous thing? Indra. And I don't know where it's from, but there's an exchange between Brahma and Indra, where Brahma's like telling Indra, oh, like I went to Krishna and I stole it in the middle of his lunch. I took all of his friends away. I took the calves and I hid them in a cave. Indra goes, yeah. You think that's bad. You know what I tried to do? And then I think enough Brahma agrees. Like, I tried to. You stole them. I tried to kill them. Big trouble. So the point, and they're both wonderful devotees. They're both great, wonderful devotees. So we shouldn't be surprised if devotees do outrageous things. Sometimes the devotees go, "Oh, did you hear what they did?" Yeah, well, Brahma stole Krishna's friends. Indra tried to kill them. Don't be surprised. These are obstacles devotees might have to encounter. We have to seriously pray for forgiveness. And we both cases, Brahma and Indra really got down and prayed very, very nicely. And actually, interesting, Krishna responds to Indra's prayers. Brahma's unique. Brahma doesn't get, because we know Brahma is higher. He's closer to Krishna. So it's interesting, in that mood, Krishna doesn't respond. Just this last point of how, boy, we have to be ready to be embarrassed. And especially Brahma, like even though Krishna doesn't respond or chastise Brahma, there's in the nectar devotion, it's actually referred to a lot of times in nectar devotion this pastime. In many times about Krishna's qualities or Udipan's symptoms of Krishna consciousness, this exchange between Brahma and Krishna is referenced many, many, many times. It's a very, so many significant lessons come out. But at one time it's mentioned how Brahma in Satyaloka was telling his associates in Satyaloka what he'd done. So he himself was admitting honestly and openly what he'd done. And we hear about exchange with Lord Brahma, Indra another time. So it was very embarrassing. I mean, to be such an exalted personality and then to do such a ridiculously embarrassing thing, we shouldn't be overtly surprised or shocked if somehow along our path of Krishna consciousness we get very embarrassed. And I'll end on this note. It actually takes, I think I was going to say, Hridaya Tanipu might, probably in this room, if I was asking anybody who knows the most embarrassing things, I bet you Hridaya Tanipu would tell us the most. One, because of his 25, 6 years in management, and two, being a member of the top managerial body. Because it's when you go forward to Krishna and you present yourself for service, then you'll find out things that you're, how you're not qualified and things are going wrong and problems coming up. If you stay back and stay safe in your little space, then maybe you never get embarrassed. But it's when you go forward and you present yourself and you try and things go wrong, you'll get embarrassed. And look at Brahma. Brahma is the head of the universe. Such an embarrassing thing. Now, we don't hear what other people have, because Brahma is such a prominent person, he opens himself the opportunity of being embarrassed like this so much. But we should be prepared. We shouldn't be hold back. And maybe that's how taking responsibility in ISKCON is difficult for us. Because we're shy, we're afraid. Oh, everybody might see my disqualification, or this might happen to me, or all. But we shouldn't let that happen to us. Gaur Govinda Maharaj, he takes this example how some devotees say in Prabhupada's time, oh, I never got much association with Prabhupada. He said, sometimes devotees would say how they didn't get much association with Srila Prabhupada. And Guru Govinda Maharaj, being unique style preacher that he was, says, yes, because you were too hiding behind your material attachments to go before the Guru and surrender. Because he's very strong at this point. You have to present to the Guru and surrender. Not just hide at the back and pretend, oh, Jai Guru, Jai Guru, and then don't get any direct instruction or direct chastisement. Those who go forward, and we know the endless cases of Tamakrishna Maharaj have been one of our most special, unique cases of going forward and doing so much service and simultaneously getting so much chastisement and therefore becoming the glorious personality that he was, that he is. So we shouldn't be frightened to be embarrassed. It's going to happen to us. Okay, I'll stop there. We'll take maybe just one question, as we should stop by 9. And if you'd like to make a comment or a question. Okay, well, yeah, I'm a little guilty so you have to indulge me in the speculation here. But I think and speculation based upon, it's explained that when Krishna goes off to find the calves, he was in the mood of finding the calves. When he comes back, he's in the mood of, I'm in trouble. And then when Brahma makes his prayers, he's still thinking, I'm not sure, is Jiva Goswami or Vishnu Chakrabarti Thakur revealed Krishna's mind? What's the cowboy's doing now? I want to be like, who is this person anyway? What is he saying? He's just not relating to Brahma's prayers at all, because he's still in his bhav in his absorption that he's just a coward boy in Vrindavan. So it's part of that mood that he's in. He has his lunch in his hand that he wants to get on eating his lunch. So his lunch was still waiting for him, and he didn't like get in to respond to Brahma. He wants to get back to his lunch. So, but that's my little personal. Possibly, quite possibly. I can't recall exactly, but that very likely would also be that. I think he told him to continue eating, but he said, you've started eating, you can go on eating, I'll be back in a minute. But it may be too, yeah. Anyway, so many little, we know there's so many little things could be there that are part of the Leela. City tones. Well, we hear that there's different. Well, I can respond by saying we know that what he didn't do, right? Maharaj Asuka Swami never said the RADHA name. Because it's just too much. But we understand, maybe example Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we can see that there was certain levels of ecstasy that he would be in, but then he would pull it back. Then he could, like in Ramananda, when he first met Ramananda Rai, he was like overwhelmed by ecstasy and devotee, but then he became aware that there's people here who aren't qualified. Okay, then he pulled it back. So I don't know the technical, and this is Rupa Goswami, Bhakti Rasam Jasindu, gives the very technical levels of the different types of ecstasy and the stages of ecstasy and the types of ecstasy. So I could prefer the answer, but I have to look up more exactly that even the pure devotee is able to pull back his ecstasy. And in Srila Prabhupada's case, we know Srila Prabhupada was the topmost devotee. Mostly he would pull back his ecstasies. Sometimes he couldn't, but mostly he did. So I would say then in doing his duty of speaking the Krishna's pastimes to Maharaj Parikshit, he restrained his ecstasies and got on and told the pastime. That would be my interpretation. One more question. Go, please. Hit me. Yeah. So let us also be so absorbed in our hearing, so absorbed in our service to Krishna, somebody's got to come and tell us, hey, you got to stop now. It's prasadam time. Now, as opposed to like, prasadam, not now. So let us all please try our best to become as absorbed as we can in our own little ways in Krishna's service and pastimes at the Gaur Boys. Chaitanya Charitamrita ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.